Well, I try to visit my brother and sister-in-law's family as often as I can. They're a wonderful family. And I inevitably learn something from one of their four little children. Sometimes I learn names of new toys or stuffed animals. Sometimes I hear about a character in a book or a movie who, in the child's imagination, has become part of the Carano family. I often learn new rules to games that I've played all my life. And somehow those rules always benefit the niece or nephew who made them up. And many times I learn about God. I remember one visit where there was some sort of an altercation between two of the siblings. Surprise, surprise. And I was trying to encourage the offending party to say they were sorry to the victim. He would have nothing to do with this disruption of playtime and got a little upset with me. I don't remember exactly what happened, but his reaction elicited a timeout from his mom. What I do remember is when he came out from the timeout and told me, he said, "I'm sorry." And I said, "It's okay. High five, all is right with the world." Now I thought that he had learned a good lesson. But it was really me who was about to learn a lesson. My sister-in-law pulled me aside and said something very insightful. She told me, "We try not to say it's okay because we don't want them to think that it's okay to act like that. We try to say, 'I forgive you.'" Our gospel passage today is a challenging one. It speaks about the reality of sin, of the need for forgiveness, and the difficulty of helping others towards reconciliation. It's a teaching that scares most of us to death, and we're tempted to say, "Well, that's not for me. I'm not at a place in my life where I could do something like that, correct a brother." And the reason we react that way, I think, is that we often don't truly see one another as family. See, my sister-in-law's comment, "It's not okay, but I can forgive you," is the true heart of a parent looking out for the well-being of her child. Of course, there's no real reason to get overly upset when a child misbehaves, but the worst thing to do would be, one, to ignore that their behavior is wrong, or two, to let the opportunity for forgiveness and reconciliation to slip by. It's the same with anyone we love, or any family member. If they're acting in an inappropriate manner, if they are sinning against God's law and not living according to His will, they are endangering themselves. If we truly believe that sin is going against the reality of who we're meant to be and of what will truly make us happy, then when we see our loved ones around us setting themselves up for failure, then the loving thing to do, Christ is saying, to bring this reality to their attention. And that's precisely the first recommendation outlined in this sort of three-step process that Jesus teaches us. So let's say a close friend is struggling with some addiction, or a sibling seems to be giving up on their marriage, or a child or a grandchild is thinking about cohabitation, or maybe someone's stealing from work, or you know of some infidelity going on, or your neighbor can't stop buying expensive toys. Immediately we start to feel that push against self-righteousness, that, "But Father, it's none of my business. Who am I to judge?" And that's very normal. We certainly need to keep in mind the splinter in the neighbor's eye versus the beam in our own. And so this teaching, of course, is a call from Jesus for us to put our lives in order as well. But we still can't ignore the reality. Jesus is no fool. He knows that His disciples aren't perfect, and yet He's teaching them to do this fraternal correction, this correction of their brothers nonetheless. So we can't take refuge in that argument about privacy or false humility. We just need to think of the interconnectedness of a family and of family life. You see, if one struggles, the whole family is impacted by that. So in a very real way, another person's business is our own business. And seeing how their actions affect them is also seeing how they pull the family life down. And that's why the issue needs to be addressed. That's why Jesus gives this teaching. The early church, of course, saw itself as one family. We need to recover that vision. You know, we heard St. Paul say in the letter to the Romans, love is the fulfillment of the law. In modern terms, we might translate that as, all you need is love. Yet sometimes we slip into thinking that that's supposed to mean live and let live. Now that's not love, because love cares for the genuine good of the other. Hence to love is to live and to help others live. Okay? So sin, we talked about, is a threat to the life of the spirit. It threatens the livelihood of the whole human family, and so we can't ignore it. To love involves facing the truth. To love involves saying, it's not okay. In St. Paul's famous phrase, he says, speak the truth with love. Now it's obvious that if we read the whole chapter of Matthew, the background of all of this teaching is forgiveness. That's the intention. And reconciliation is the final goal. Because immediately before this passage, we have the shepherd leaving his flock to seek the one lost sheep out of 100. If you notice our new stained glass window. In today's passage, we heard the reiteration of the power given to the apostles to bind and to loose. That is, to untie the bonds of sin through forgiveness if one is truly repentant and sorry for their sins. And next week, what follows this passage, we'll hear Peter asking, how often must I forgive? You see, it's not about the confrontation. It's about the goal behind it. It's about the forgiveness, to helping one another get back on the path to true life, to reconciling relationships that were affected by an offense. Okay, then Jesus talks about the second step, and he mentions bringing a few witnesses along to help convince the person of their wrongdoing. See, this step is actually something that helps the one who is bringing that to the attention of their loved one, to be sure that their judgment is correct. See, sometimes we do misinterpret things. So if we look and we can't find someone else who sees things as we do, then we drop the issue, presuming that we're the ones who have misunderstood. We might even need to apologize. But if we do find others who are legitimately concerned about the well-being of the errant loved one, then what Jesus is describing is what we know as an intervention. And once again, this isn't easy stuff, but it's the stuff that's done out of love, out of the true good of the and interest of the person. So if that doesn't work, there's a third step that Jesus tells us about. That's to bring the offense to the attention of the Christian community. See, the church is meant to be a community. That is, a group of people united in the love of God and in the love of one another. Hence, this step is about showing how the person's actions can disrupt the unity of the church, of the community. The church, of course, is a place of forgiveness. But the person, we all, need to change our ways in order to be truly reconciled, to be in full unity with the assembly. What Jesus had in mind specifically in this step, it's hard to say. It doesn't appear to be some public spectacle or trial. It most likely presumes a very small church setting, a small community, which the Christians had in the first century. Again, that loving family, concern for the welfare of each of its own. Then finally, after those three steps, Jesus says that if the person refuses to admit their fault and to repent, that they're excused from the community. Or more to the point, they've excused themselves from the community. And basically saying there's nothing more that we can do but pray for them and be ready to welcome them back they choose to return. It seems very harsh to us. But we have to remember the background of all of this. This is to preserve the community, to keep it on the path to life. In all societies, rules are set up in order to help the community. And if one person is acting in a way that's detrimental to others, that must be dealt with. So it is with sin. If we just stand by and say, it's okay, then we allow that to corrode what it means to be a Christian. And the poison of sin seeps in and begins to touch everyone in the family. We're called to forgive, absolutely. But we're not meant to be permissive. I know none of this is easy. It's not something that you or I wake up excited to do. And these are the things that bring great heartache to so many who are seeking to do the right thing. All the more reason to do it. It shows that you are legitimately concerned for the good of the other if it pains you to do this. It's not something to get excited about, but as our gospel today concludes, we need to take refuge and gain strength from prayer. And we need to keep our focus on God's desire. His desire to give the gift of forgiveness, to bring people back into relationship with Him. Jesus came to the earth to seek and to save the lost. He leaves the 100 to bring back the one. And He entrusts that very same mission to us. Today He's asking us to do something which is uncomfortable in order to show our love and to invite those that we love back into relationship with Him.